This is one of a series of lectures using the studies of my God's Plan for Man book and my Bible chart. I am Finis Jennings Dake, and the subject of this lecture is the prophecy of Daniel and the times of the Gentiles. Now let me first introduce to you the subject of prophecy. Prophecy is simply a record of what is going to happen, expressed in the most simple human language possible. Events which are yet to happen. Just like history is a record of what has happened, prophecy is a record of what is going to happen. And if we would understand prophecy that way, then we wouldn't have to have the complete fulfillment of the prophecies in order to understand it, as we hear in many quarters. The Bible is very simple in its prophetical statements, and if we would believe what we find written in prophecy like we believe what is written in history, then we could have a simple understanding of the future. In the second chapter of the book of Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar dreamed a dream of a great image that stood before him. The image head was of gold, the breast and the arms were of silver, the belly and the thighs were of brass, the legs were of iron, and the feet part of iron and part of clay. He saw a stone cut out of the mountain without hands, which smote the image on the feet and break all these metals and pieces together, ground them to powder, and the wind carried them away. And the stone that smote the image on the feet became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. This is interpreted for us in the second chapter of Daniel, verses 38 to 45, just as simply as a child can understand. First part, "Thou art this head of gold," referring to Nebuchadnezzar and his kingdom. Thou art this head of gold. Now, couldn't we all believe that, just like it is, without us giving different interpretations of it? Couldn't we accept it as a simple fact that Nebuchadnezzar and his kingdom were symbolized by the head of gold and let it go at that? If so, then where is your problem? There is no problem at all. We could believe it just as simply as it is written. Then the second medal, the second kingdom, verse 39. After you, Mr. Nebuchadnezzar, will come a second kingdom inferior to yours, which was the Media-Persian Empire. And a third kingdom, a brass, which shall bear rule over all the earth, which symbolized the old Grecian Empire. And the fourth kingdom, symbolized by the iron on the image, and the 10 toes, symbolizing 10 divisions, or 10 parts, 10 final kingdoms that will be formed inside of the fourth empire, as we shall see in our study of the seventh chapter of the book of Daniel. And the stone that smote the image on the feet is explained in verses 44 and 45 to be the kingdom of the God of heaven at the second advent of Jesus Christ. He said, "In the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed. It shall not be left to other peoples, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever." Now, the times of the Gentiles are generally associated with these kingdoms of Daniel, from Daniel's day on to the second coming of Christ. But that is not strictly true. If we would understand what the times of the Gentiles really refers to and what it really literally means, it means that period in Israel's history from the beginning of Israel as a nation in the land of Egypt to the second coming of Christ, that Israel has been oppressed more or less by the Gentiles. In other words, it is the times that the Gentiles have dominated the Jews, not the times that Israel was independent, or not the time that Israel dominated the Gentile, but the times of the Gentiles in domination of Israel. And that naturally began in the land of Egypt. Two kingdoms before the time, 17th chapter, verse 8, "The beast which thou sawest was and is not shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition. And all that dwell upon the earth shall wonder, whose names are not found written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world, when they behold the beast that was and is not, yet is or shall be." Here is wisdom. The seven heads on which the woman sitteth are seven kingdoms. Seven kingdoms. Not seven literal hills on which the city of Rome was built, but seven kingdoms. Five are fallen. These five that had fallen before John saw the revelation were Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Medo-Persia, and Greece. Five are fallen. One is. That means the sixth empire, the one that was in existence when John saw the book of Revelation, has come. That's the one that is going to be made up of the 10 toes of the image of Daniel 2. The seventh kingdom is not yet come. When he cometh, he must continue a short space. But the beast itself, in verse 11, the beast itself is the eighth kingdom. The eighth kingdom. All right, we have proof then from Revelation 17 that there are eight great world empires in the so-called times of the Gentiles. Now the terms times of the Gentiles and fullness of the Gentiles are explained by many scholars to be the same event, and by others as referring to two different events altogether. For example, the times of the Gentiles, they consider it to be the political domination of the Jews by the Gentiles, while the term fullness of the Gentiles, found in the 11th chapter of the book of Daniel, verse 25, they interpret it to be the times that the Gentiles can be saved. That period in the past and the present and the future that the Gentiles will be saved. But there is no difference between the two terms. They mean exactly, no doubt, the same thing. We cannot interpret the expression times of the Gentiles as referring to anything else but the political domination of the Jews by the Gentiles. And we shouldn't interpret the expression times or fullness of the Gentiles as referring to a period of salvation for the Gentiles. Some men even tell you that the door of the mercy to the Gentiles is so closed that only skinny people can squeeze through. And very few are being saved. And there will be a time when not one Gentile will ever be saved. But that is not the teaching of the Bible. During the time that Gentiles are not supposed to be saved, they are still being saved. All through the tribulation, between the rapture and the second advent of Christ, and all through the millennial reign of Jesus Christ, you will find people turning to God and being saved. So much so, until we read in the 11th chapter of the book of Isaiah, verse 9, that the knowledge of the Lord will eventually cover the earth as the waters cover the sea. And all nations will have the opportunity of serving Jesus Christ in person and serving him in visible form, going to Jerusalem year by year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. So now let's just get it clear that the times of the Gentiles is that period of political domination of Israel. The fullness of the Gentiles refers to exactly the same thing. Both are going to end at the second coming of Jesus Christ, because Romans 11:25 says blindness in part has happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles be come in. So all Israel shall be saved, as it is written, there shall come out of Zion the deliverer, and shall turn away ungodliness from Jacob. So the idea here is that the Gentile experiences of accepting Jesus Christ, the Gentile opportunity of finding God, will continue right on up to the second coming of Jesus Christ itself. And so it is with the times of the Gentiles. The times of the Gentiles is only used one time in the entire Bible, and that is in Luke 21:24. Jesus said in Luke 21:20, when you therefore shall see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that the desolation thereof is nigh. Ye shall fall by the edge of the sword, shall be led away captive into all nations, and Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled. Now when will the times of the Gentiles end? According to this passage, when the Jews ceased to be trodden down or dominated by the Gentiles, and when Jerusalem ceases to be in Gentile hands. And if we were to read Revelation 11, verses 1 and 2, where John said, "The angel gave me a reed like unto a rod." That's a measuring stick about 12 and a half feet long. He said, "Rise, measure the temple of God and the altar and them that worship therein. But the court which is without, measure it not, for it is given unto the Gentiles. And the holy city shall they tread under feet 42 months. 42 months. That means, you see, that the Gentiles will take Jerusalem the last 42 months of this age, during which Antichrist will have had a contract with Israel and will have broken that contract in the middle of the 7 years. And he is setting himself now in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. So both of these scriptures prove that the times of the Gentiles end at the second coming of Jesus Christ, at which time Jerusalem and Israel will be delivered from the Gentiles once and forever, and Christ will reign in visible form upon the planet Earth. We read in the 14th chapter of Zechariah the same idea. "Behold, the day of the Lord cometh, and thy spoil shall be divided in the midst of thee. I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle. The city shall be taken, the houses rifled, the women ravished. Half of the city shall go forth into captivity, but the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then shall the Lord go forth and fight against those nations when he fought in the day of battle. His feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives, which is before Jerusalem on the east. The Mount of Olives shall cleave in the midst thereof, half of it toward the east and half of it toward the west. There shall be a very great valley. And ye shall flee to the valley of the mountains. Yea, ye shall fled before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. The Lord my God cometh, and all the saints with thee." Then we read in verse 9 of this chapter, Zechariah 14, "The Lord shall be king over all the earth. In that day there shall be one Lord, and his name one." So Jerusalem will be trodden down of the Gentiles right up to the very day of the second coming of Christ. And the Gentiles will have taken the city, will have taken half of it into captivity by the time that Jesus Christ lands on the planet Earth with his resurrected saints to fight the Antichrist and the kings of the earth and their armies at the Battle of Armageddon. So much for the times of the Gentiles itself as to a definition and as to the length of it, or rather the time that it will end. Now as to the length of it, this is another question. We have quite a controversy over the country as to the length of the times of the Gentiles. So many men think that it refers to that period from Daniel's day to the second coming of Christ. But as we have seen in Revelation 17, that notice on the Bible chart, the second world empire to oppress Israel in the times of the Gentiles. And it was this empire, the Assyrian Empire, that took the 10 tribes into captivity 749 B.C. So there are two world empires that Bible scholars do not take into consideration when they talk about the full length of the times of the Gentiles. Then they start their times with the time of Daniel and Nebuchadnezzar, and they carry the times of the Gentiles on through the ages, through the Babylonian Empire, the Medo-Persian Empire, the Grecian Empire, the Roman Empire, and the kingdom of the Antichrist of the future, making only six world empires in the times of the Gentiles, which would be Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, Rome, and revised Rome, and then the kingdom of the Antichrist itself. But now the Bible teaches that children of Israel were oppressed in Egypt long before Nebuchadnezzar's day. Well, you remember they were oppressed in Egypt in the days of Moses, and for 80 years during the lifetime of Moses, they were murdering the male children in the land of Egypt, trying to exterminate the whole nation of Israel. And at that time, God raised up Moses and led him out of Egypt with the children of Israel. And God planned to make of them a great nation and bless them forever. But Israel failed God, and then they were scattered among the nations two times, 1616 B.C. in the days of Nebuchadnezzar, and once 70 A.D. when Titus with the Roman army destroyed the city of Jerusalem, scattered the Jews abroad on all the face of the earth, as stated in Luke 21:24. For Jesus predicted of the Jews in his day, "You shall fall by the edge of the sword, and shall be led away captive into all nations, and Jerusalem shall be trodden down of the Gentiles, until the times of the Gentiles be fulfilled." Thus, where men start their times of the Gentiles with Nebuchadnezzar on to the second coming of Christ, that only takes in part of the times of the Gentiles. We have to go back and take in the Egyptian and the Assyrian empires which preceded the empire of Nebuchadnezzar in the day of Daniel. So there are eight great world empires, and let us name them for you once more. First one is Egypt, that held the children of Israel in bondage while in the land of Egypt, while they were becoming a nation. Then the Assyrian Empire, that oppressed Israel off and on for 250 years, and finally taking the 10 tribes into captivity, 79 B.C. Then we come to Daniel's day, Babylonian Empire under Nebuchadnezzar, the Medo-Persian Empire, the Grecian Empire, the Roman Empire, the revised Roman Empire, and then the Kingdom of the Antichrist, called the Eighth Kingdom, in Revelation 17, verse 11. Now you say, what made men begin the times of the Gentiles with the book of Daniel then, if that be the case? Well, just because they read the prophecy of Daniel from Daniel's day on. Daniel couldn't have prophesied before the Egyptian bondage of Israel in Egypt in the day of Moses, because Daniel didn't live back that far. He didn't see his prophecies back that far. And he didn't live before the Assyrian Empire. He lived for the first and last time in Nebuchadnezzar's empire, the Babylonian Empire. And men got started stating that this was the whole length of the times of the Gentiles, at this image of Daniel 2 and the beasts of Daniel 8 and 7 and 8 and 11 pictured the full length of the times of the Gentiles. They started that with the idea that the times of the Gentiles naturally started with Daniel. But they didn't naturally start with Daniel. They started with Egypt, and then continued with Assyria, and then with Babylon, and then with Medo-Persia, and then with Greece, then with Rome, and then with revised Rome, and the kingdom of the Antichrist, the eighth and last kingdom, to ever oppress the Jews in the times of the Gentiles. Now, many times you read books telling us that the times of the Gentiles will last for 2,520 years. Now, where did men get the idea of 2,520 years to begin with? They got it from the 26th chapter of the book of Leviticus, beginning with verses 14 to 18, where we read that God told the children of Israel that he would permit eight great punishments to come upon them if they would disobey him and break his commandments and break his covenant, which they did. So he said, "If you will not for all these eight judgments measure up to my requirements and come clean with me," then he said in verse 18 of Leviticus 26, "I will punish you yet seven times more for your sins." Yet seven times more for your sins. Now you see, this itself proves that the times of the Gentiles was a longer period than 2,520 years, if the expression seven times in Leviticus 26:18 would refer to 2,520 years, as many Bible scholars tell you. Now you say, how can they get 2,520 years out of little expression seven times? Well, that's the beauty of Bible interpretation. You can make the Bible mean anything you want to mean, so they tell us. And in this case, men have figured out how we could possibly make seven times, a little statement seven times, to refer to a period of 2,520 years. You know how they do it? I never could have figured it out myself, I guess. Maybe you could not. But It's even hard for us to believe it after they get this idea from it. And it really becomes contradictory to the Bible when they carry it out that far. Now let me tell you how they get it. They make a year a day and a day a year. Many Bible scholars do that. A day for a day, a year, and a year for a day. And 1,000 years for a day, and a day for 1,000 years. They even go to that extent. But the Bible does not teach either one of those things. With God, a day is like 1,000 years, but not with us. With us, a day is always a day, a week is always a week, a month is always a month, and a year is always a year, and a millennium or 1,000 years is always 1,000 years, and 5,000 years is always 5,000 years. There's no way getting around it. There's no such thing as a general doctrine in the Bible or a specific doctrine in the Bible telling us that the idea of a day for a year is a biblical at all. So I don't even bother with it myself. And I wouldn't advise you to do it. Thing I would advise you to do, though, is to be simple and childlike in all your understanding of the Bible. And this here idea is not biblical from any standpoint. At the times of the Gentiles were 2,520 years based upon the idea of seven times meaning 2,520 years. You see, I still don't understand how they started, how they got the thing. Well, the idea is that they would make a prophetic year, a period of 360 days, and naturally on anybody's adding machine, if you punch the right buttons, seven times 360 will equal every time 2,520. It's easy after you learn how to do it. But here we have the proof now of one expression seven times. And when they get a period of 360 days added up to 2,520, they make a day a year and a year a day. And so naturally, if you convert the 360 days, the days, just literally, well, then there's no problem left. Seven times 360 days, if you make the days to be years, would be 360 years times seven, or 2,520 years. Now, here's the peculiar thing about that theory. It doesn't work out in the first instance of its being interpreted for us in the 18th verse of the 26th chapter of Leviticus. For in verse 21 of the same chapter, God said, if you will not measure up to me by all these first eight judgments, verses 14 to 17, and if you will not measure up to me by the first seven times, or if you want to call it 2,520 years, then I will punish you yet seven times more for your sins. So here's a second period of 2,520 years. And then that isn't all. In verse 24, you have the same expression found again. If you will not for all these first eight judgments, and for the first 2,520 years, and the second 2,520 years measure up to me and my requirements, then I will punish you seven times more for your sins. So that's a third period of 2,520 years. And then that isn't all. Verse 28 of the same chapter said, if you will not for all these first eight judgments, and by the first 2,520 years, and the second 2,520 years, and the third 2,520 years, if I cannot reform you by that time, he said, I'll punish you again, or yet, seven times more for your sins. So that's a period of 2,520 years, four different times, making altogether 10,080 years that the children of Israel were to be in bondage, more or less, to the Gentiles. You see how ridiculous such a theory is. There's no biblical grounds for it whatsoever. 2,520 years cannot be the length of the times of the Gentiles, because we have already covered 3,500 years in in history between the time of Moses in the land of Egypt until our day. And there'll be some more years yet before the second coming of Christ. So the expression times of the Gentiles and the idea that they are 120 years long cannot be proved by the Bible at all. On the contrary, it is contrary to the Bible for us to talk about any such theory. Now, if the expression seven times in Leviticus, four times used here in this one chapter, if that expression seven times every time it is used is interpreted properly and consistently, we would have some mighty peculiar scriptures in the Bible. For example, in the days of Elisha, Naaman the Syrian came to Elisha to be healed of his leprosy. And you know what Elisha said? He said, "You go down and dip seven times in the river Jordan, and you will be clean." Shall we interpret that like we do the seven times expression in Leviticus 26? Shall we interpret that to mean that this king or this Syrian leader literally dipped for 2,520 years? Well, I suppose anybody ought to be clean by that time. And even Nebuchadnezzar we find in the fourth chapter of the book of Daniel. He was driven from his kingdom until seven times passed over his head. Seven times passed over his head. In other words, he was out in the field eating grass with the beast of the field, and his hair became like feathers and his fingernails like bird claws, till 7 years passed over him. And if we want to interpret that like we do the other places, then that would literally mean that Nebuchadnezzar was driven from his kingdom and was out eating grass with the beast of the field for 2,520 years. And you can take the expression wherever you find it in the Bible, where you find the expression seven times, and apply the same principle of interpretation to it, and it makes very laughable reading. So in view of this, I wouldn't advise you at all to believe in the length of the times of the Gentiles to be 2,520 years. On this basis, men have been predicting the end of this age for us for a number of years. I've been here a number of years myself, and I remember when they began to tell us in 1914-18 that the Gentiles would come to an end. Then they told us in 1924, and I got one pamphlet, "Keep this until 1927, and I kept it until 1927, and the times of the Gentiles were supposed to come to an end. But they didn't come to an end. Then Bible scholars kept setting up the dates for the times of the Gentiles to end to 32, 42, 45, 54, and so on. They just kept adding dates. Now, they've just about run out of dates, and you don't hear too much about it anymore. And it only shows you that the foundation of such a theory as the times of the Gentiles being 2,520 years is not worthy of our consideration. And it's not a biblical idea. The truth is now that the times of the Gentiles, as we've said, has already lasted for 3,500 years from the day of Moses in the land of Egypt till our day. And there are several more years yet before the times of the Gentiles can come to an end. The times of the Gentiles cannot come to an end until the second coming of Christ. That means that the Antichrist will be here at least for 7 years before the second coming of Christ. That means there's at least 7 years yet for the length of the times of the Gentiles. Then we have 10 kingdoms that are to be formed inside the Roman Empire in the latter days. That must be done also before the time of the Antichrist and his coming, as we'll see in a few moments. Now then, so much for the second chapter of the book of Daniel. Now the next prophetical chapter is found in the seventh chapter of Daniel, where we have four beasts coming up out of the water, out of the sea. One was like a lion, one like a bear, one like a leopard, one a nondescript beast. All four beasts coming up out of the sea. And if you'll notice in verse 17 of the seventh chapter of Daniel here, Verse 17, these four beasts are explained in such simple language that even children can get it. It said, these four beasts are four kings or kingdoms that shall arise. Now Daniel saw the fourth beast in verses 7 and 8 having 10 horns on its head. Then he said in verse 8, I considered the horns, and there came up among the 10 horns another little horn, before whom 3 of the first horns are plucked up by the roots. And in this little horn appeared eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth that spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows. Which in verse 19 is explained further for us. Now Mr. Daniel talked to the angel, said, Mr. Angel, if you will tell me what those beasts represent, especially the fourth beast represents, and the 10 horns on that fourth beast, what they represent, and that little horn that I saw coming out of the 10 horns, plucking up 3 of the 10 horns by the root, if you'll tell me what that means. Even that horn, he said, which had eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth that spake very great things, whose look was more stout than his fellows. If you'll tell me what all these things mean, I will write it in a book, and I'll send it down to those Christians way down at the end of this age so they can understand what the beasts represent, what the horns represent, what the little horn represents, and they can understand the whole thing so they won't have to argue so much about it. So he said, if you'll do it, I'll write it in a book and we'll pass it on to them, which he did, but that doesn't stop the argument. Seems like men can never figure out how there could be 10 horns on a head and another little horn coming after them and among them. We just can't seem to figure all these details out. But the fact of it is now, in verse 7 of this 7th chapter, he saw the fourth beast with 10 horns, not 11, just 10, not 4, just 10. And that's all. Then in verse 8, he said, I considered the horn. We don't need to argue about that. And then he said, the 10 horns out of this kingdom, out of, meaning from inside this kingdom, are 10 kings that shall arise. 10 kings will come on the head of that fourth beast, and then another little horn will grow out of the 10, and after the 10, and among the 10, and will overthrow 3 of the 10. Now that's explained in verse 24 this way. The 10 horns out of this kingdom, that means inside the Roman Empire territory, out of this kingdom shall arise. And another shall rise, A-F-T-E-R, after, not before. If Bible scholars would have known the difference between after and before, a generation or so ago, we wouldn't have had so many speculations about Mussolini, Hitler, Joe Stalin, the Pope of Rome, even President Roosevelt, and all kinds of antichrists in the past. Now, the fact you need to get clear now is the next part of this vision that is going to be fulfilled is the formation of 10 kingdoms inside, not part inside and not part outside, but all inside the fourth kingdom, the Roman Empire territory. So all you have to do is get a Roman Empire territory map, and you can see what modern countries are today inside the old Roman Empire. You will find that there are 25 governments in that territory today. And that teaches you then that this is not yet fulfilled. That is the formation of 10 kingdoms inside the Roman Empire. They never have come in the past, and they haven't yet come up to our day. And when they do come, they will all 10 be alive at the time of the second coming of Jesus Christ to the earth. Or in Revelation 17, verses 10 to 16, 17, we read here, at the 10 horns are 10 kings which will receive no kingdom as yet, but receive powers, kings 1 hour with the beast. And these shall make war on the Lamb, verse 14. Revelation 17, verse 14. I get this. These shall make war on the Lamb, But the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is King of kings and Lord of lords, and they that are with him are the called, chosen, and faithful. This teaches us that the ten kingdoms, if they're not here now, they have to come in the future, because they're going to all be alive at the time of the second coming of Christ, and are going to fight against Jesus Christ along with the beast at the Battle of Armageddon. All right, now let's go back to the book of Daniel, verse 24. It said, the ten horns out of this empire, out of the Roman Empire, are ten kingdoms that shall arise. And another shall rise after them, not before them. And you can't make after mean before spiritually either, or symbolically or anyway. Just take it literally as it is. The word after means following. What are we to expect then in the fulfillment of this scripture first? The rise of some antichrist or the formation of ten kingdoms? Why, naturally, if the word after means that antichrist is coming after the ten kingdoms, then the ten kingdoms being formed will be the first thing in the fulfillment of this prophecy. And we even have that fulfilled now, according to some, because many are holding the idea that the common market nations are the ten kingdoms of Daniel 7, verses 7 and 8, and 23 and 24. Don't you believe it. The common market nations have nothing to do with what we're talking about in the fulfillment of Daniel 7. The common market nations are all in Northern Europe. Not a one of them in Africa. Not a one of them in Asia. And all nine of them now are in Europe. Northern Europe. That teaches us that they have nothing to do with the formation of ten kingdoms inside the Roman Empire. When the ten kingdoms are formed, here's what you will find. You will find ten kingdoms formed not only in Northern Europe, but in Northern Africa and Western Asia and Southern Europe, because these ten kingdoms are going to be from all the territory of the Roman Empire, not from just one portion of the Roman Empire, such as the common market nations of Europe. No, no. The ten kingdoms are not yet formed, and they never will be formed until a war breaks out in the near future, and will form the ten kingdoms out of 25 present governments that are inside the old Roman Empire territory. So the thing for us to do is just be sensible. Not look for any human antichrist. Not look for any antichrist from the dead or from the living or from any place until after, A-F-T-E-R, after the ten kingdoms are formed. And when they are formed, they will be formed in North Africa, in Western Europe, or Western Asia, and in Western Europe and Southern Europe. Yes, there will be ten kingdoms formed inside the Roman Empire. That is what men call today the revived Roman Empire. But the Bible does not call it that. We have to call it something else, because it is not a revival of the Roman Empire again. In that case, it would mean that some man would arise before the ten kingdoms and revive the old Roman Empire into one empire ruled by him or by one man in Rome again. That's not the idea. The idea is simply that the ten kingdoms must be formed first. Then, for after a short space, the little horn comes from among the ten and out of the ten, and in his rise to power he overthrows three of the ten. So we have the idea then of the kingdom of the Antichrist being formed before he comes on the scene, as far as being formed into ten kingdoms are concerned. But don't associate it with the common market nations, whatever you do, because that'll never be. We always have to have an antichrist or some forerunner of the antichrist and some forerunner of the ten kings. We have to have a lot of forerunners, but the Bible doesn't mention any one forerunner, either for the antichrist or the ten kingdoms or for any, the fulfillment of any of these things. So the first thing to be fulfilled in this prophecy is the formation of ten kingdoms inside the Roman Empire out of the 25 governments that are therein. When that is done, John 17 verses 10 and 12 tells us that this seventh kingdom, made up of the ten kingdoms, will continue a short space, which, if it refers to the same length of space as in the 12th chapter of Revelation, it refers to 3.5 years. For in that chapter, the great red dragon is cast down on the earth, knowing he has but a short time, and that short time is explained for us in verse 6 and verse 14 of the 12th of Revelation as being 1,203 score days, or a time times and a half a time. All right, the idea first of the formation of 10 kingdoms inside the Roman Empire. That's the first thing to look for. Forget about looking for any Antichrist from any source. No man prominent in world affairs today could possibly be the one we're talking about. This man is going to be revealed in his time, according to 2 Thessalonians 2. And you don't need to look for any Antichrist until after the 10 kingdoms are formed, because that's the word you find in Daniel 7:24. Another shall rise after them and shall cause the formation of the 10. No. He are already formed before he comes. And so first thing to be fulfilled here is the formation of 10 kingdoms inside the Roman Empire. Then and then only can you ever expect to have an Antichrist to arise after the 10 kingdoms. And in his rise to power among the 10 kingdoms, he overthrows 3 of those 10 kingdoms and plucks them up by the roots. So the first thing to look for is the formation of 10 kingdoms. Then the rise of the Antichrist. In his rise to power over the 10 kingdoms, during the first 3.5 years of what we call Daniel's 70th week, the Antichrist will be conquering Greece, Turkey, and Egypt, as we'll see in our next lecture of the book of Daniel. So the first thing to be looking for is not some Antichrist, but 10 kingdoms to be formed inside of the Roman Empire territory, and then only, the Antichrist after that. And when he comes, it's going to take him 3.5 years to form the 10 kingdoms into another empire called the 8th kingdom in Revelation 8, verse 11. So here the Antichrist comes out of the 10 kingdoms after the 10 kingdoms are in existence and are in independent of each other for a while, 3 or 4 years or how long it is. We do not know exactly, but a short space we read. Then after this short space, and after the 10 kingdoms are formed, and after the 10 kingdoms have been ruling for a short space, then comes the Antichrist from one of the 10, and we'll point out which one in our next lecture. He comes out of one of the 10 and overthrows 3 others. That will fulfill Daniel 7, 23 and 24, and Daniel 7, verses 8, 7 and 8. Those two scriptures, they'll always mean exactly what they say. And if you recognize this one principle now, the Antichrist must first come after the 10 kingdoms are formed, not before they are formed. After them. And he will subdue 3 of them. Then the other 6, according to Revelation 17, will submit to him without any further war. Then the Antichrist will be the ruler of the whole 10 kingdoms during the last 42 months of this age. For after he is given power over the 10 kingdoms, we read in Revelation 5, power was given him to continue 42 months.